around us and they're growing. It will soon be too late for the night. If you leave them on the wind that around the world is blowing, you may pay for your silence with your life. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth and never dare. And if it happens here, they'll never come for you, because they'll know you really didn't care.
And that was Peggy Seeger and Ewan McCall from an ancient 70s tape at the present moment. You are, as I said before, attuned to Bathrob Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, back on the air at last after a long period of static. And hopefully to stay on the air, but to get your help, that's what we need, actually, is your help to stay on the air. We don't have a call-in line at the moment, and we don't have a call-in number. We do have a voicemail that you can give us information on and receive information from. It's 427-4523, 427-4523, in case you want further information about Free Radio Santa Cruz, want to contribute to the station's efforts. If you have tapes you want to give, if you have public announcements that you want to put on the air, we're here to help you. We're here to be a part of the community. That's what this is all about. This show, a two-hour show on civil rights for the poor, is we'd actually hope to have a phone hookup ready, and we haven't yet, but we're going to eventually. We're going to be relying instead on written materials and on some tapes and hopefully some good music to keep you both entertained and educated in the next 2 hours. And to begin with, we're going to return to the case of the man who was shot dead by police back in November, known as Happy John Dine. Happy John, as you know, those of you who've been listening to this station, was a local character. He was a man of the streets often. He was a man who liked to go about in tie-dyes, sort of a fellow who celebrated the 60s and the 90s. He's no longer with us. He was a homeless activist who was a part of the City Hall Sleepers protest in 1996 when scores of people slept out in front of City Hall and received hundreds of tickets in order to get the City Council to address the issue of the sleeping ban, which is now being pursued, of course, through the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, now out on the streets and looking for your signature. But that's another story. The story we have now is a discussion of Happy John Dine. There's been some material in the less-than-local press beyond Santa Cruz. The press that's been covering Happy John locally has been almost, without exception, atrocious. The Sentinel, as those of you who may know who followed this case, a man who was shot dead by two bullets from the revolver of Officer Connor Carey on November 12th in the evening at the corner of Front and Soquel Streets at a bus stop. If you follow the case in the Sentinel, you know that they quickly bought the police story, which was that Dine was brandishing a weapon elsewhere. A call was put in, police came and found him there, that he pointed what appeared to be a weapon at them, held it in his hand visibly, refused to drop it, advanced on them in a threatening manner, and assumed a combat stance, according to the district attorney and the police chief at a press conference the day after the shooting, and of course was shot dead with two bullets to the abdomen and chest area by Officer Connor Carey. This story, of course, was disputed by every non-police witness, and when it finally made the rounds to the Citizens Police Review Board several months later, which didn't really hear any of those witnesses directly, didn't bother to hold independent investigation or public hearings where the testimony could have been challenged or discussed or questioned further. Nonetheless, even under the closed circumstances and the limited just look over the shoulder of the police department procedure of the Citizens Police Review Board, they found that they gave a different story, and that story was that Dine was reaching for a weapon, that there was nothing in his hand, that he wasn't pointing anything at the police, that he didn't assume a combat stance. All these allegations were discredited. The police department so far has made no admission that their initial story was wrong, nor has the district attorney's office, even though if you talk privately to district attorneys involved in the case, they will admit, yeah, that's the case. The story of Dine reaching for a weapon hasn't been shown to be the case either, but it's less flagrantly, obviously, in contradiction with all non-police eyewitness testimony, and therefore it serves as a better cover story. And may well be the true story, but we're not going to know, of course, until an independent investigation, if that ever happens. I have with me in the studio, however, as I said before, journalists didn't cover this nationally. It got a brief column or two in the Chronicle, disturbed man shot down. But there are some journalists who have been interested. One paper has been Street Spirit, which is sold in Santa Cruz but published in San Francisco. And for the first time, the story made a national impact in a newspaper called Socialist Action. I have the writer of this story here with me in the studio, and let me introduce him. Steve Argue, say hello to everybody out there, and just belly up to the mic. You got to be very close.
Hello, this is Steve Argue.
Hey, Steve. Is this a beat you usually cover, police brutality? Have you written a lot of stories about this kind of thing?
I wrote one on myself when I was beaten by police when I was a teenager. And I think that's the only other article that I've written on police brutality itself. I've written on other things, Native American rights and other issues.
What interested you about this story? This is you told me you wrote a considerably longer story. This is a Santa Cruz officials cover up police killing of homeless man, Socialist Action, February 1998. What brought this to your attention in the first place?
Well, a couple things brought it to my attention. I saw the headlines when it happened, and at the time, actually, I had been shying away from political activity for a period of time. For a number of reasons, I won't even get into that. But I was talking to someone at a bar, and she came up to me, or she asked me if I had anything to do with the protesting going on around this, because I've discussed a lot of issues and talk in terms of activism and taking on the government. And making the truth known on a whole number of issues. So she naturally, this woman who knew me a little bit, questioned me if I was doing anything on this, and I said no, and I really didn't know anything about it, and she wanted to know because she was putting forward that yeah, this guy was pointing a gun and thought it would be terrible if I was messing around with, you know, making an issue of this. Probably the officer feels bad about what he did, and I said, well, I really don't know what happened, but you know, if the guy was pointing a gun, a toy gun, that was pretty stupid of him, is what I said. And another guy at the bar confronted me about this, and he said, you know, I've been down to a couple of these protests, and this isn't what happened. He wasn't pointing a toy gun, and this man put forward the story of most of the witnesses on the scene said, besides the police connected witnesses and the police, and he confronted me on this, and I said, okay, you're right, but this man expected more from me. He said, well, how can you just say this is right, or that I'm right about this, and not be doing anything about this? If you see these types of things going on and have seen these types of things go on in the past, how can you not be doing anything on this? And I didn't really have an answer for him, and he made me think about it. And I looked at what brought it up again are these letters that Robert Norris sent into the Santa Cruz Sentinel. And I looked at that, and finally I decided, well, I got to look into this for myself. And I gave Robert Norris a call, and came down and got Becky Johnson, who's also been working on this a lot on this issue. Becky Johnson was able to provide a large dossier of information, which I used to put together this article. exposing this police and government cover-up.
Why, let me play devil's advocate here, why should you believe Robert Norris, me, and Becky Johnson? I mean, we have a reputation as being of being critical of different aspects of the Santa Cruz Police Department on different occasions. We frequently have opposed, I have frequently opposed, I think she has as well, expansions of police power like the youth curfew, like the downtown ordinances against sitting downtown for homeless people, and again, the panhandling ordinances. There are those who say we have an agenda. Why should you believe what we have to say? The police department certainly has investigated the situation. What would lead you to disbelieve what they and the district attorney's office found?
Well, the evidence is overwhelming in and of itself. It's not just something presented by Becky Johnson or Robert Norris. It's you can go down anybody listening. I recommend you go down to the public library and look at the police documents on this, the interviews they did of the witnesses, and beyond that, I was able to see a taped interview with Tom Murphy, one of the witnesses, who left town in fear for his life. He was threatened. He says he was threatened by the police twice, and obviously took those threats very seriously because he left town. But he did a taped interview. The evidence itself. I never take anybody's word on anything just for granted. Maybe at times, but I mean, on a serious issue like this and putting together an article, I looked at the evidence and what witnesses had to say. Why I had a suspicion that Robert Norris and Becky Johnson were correct is I've seen the police act and function in this way before. So that doesn't surprise me at all. So I was willing to look at the facts and look into this. One of the first issues of police brutality that I looked into when I was in high school was this man in my neighborhood named Helceron Scott in St. Paul, Minnesota, who three witnesses saw the police handcuff this man, put him up against the squad car, and put a gun to his head and blow his brains out.
Which this is in Wisconsin, you say?
In Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Those three witnesses soon after left, or didn't leave town like Tom Murphy, but they became quiet, and they were threatened. I was involved in things at that time. The Hormel Meatpackers strike was a strike I was supporting, and I was organizing people from my high school to go to Austin, Minnesota to support that strike, and I had an experience with that taught me never to believe what the press says. I always read between the lines, because everything they had on that story was tilted and were lies about what was going on. Everything was printed on the side of Hormel and against the workers. When the police would attack us on the picket lines, we'd have headlines in the newspapers, the main newspapers, saying that we had attacked the police, and they would turn everything around. Through the course of being involved in these things, I myself became a victim of the police in St. Paul, and I was arrested. A friend was beaten up right on the street. They would not tell me what I was charged with. Seven police beat me in a cell. And with that experience, I went around St. Paul immediately after that and talked to other victims of police brutality, including a man, a Chicano man, who was a victim of a police beating that was so brutal that it broke his arm. And then after his arm was broken, they took the arm and twisted it while he was in jail, and caused permanent nerve damage to his arm. And I talked to this man. He owned a restaurant called Casa La Pablo.
La Pablo?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he had owned a bar before that, and that was at the time the beating took place. But he closed down his restaurant for a couple hours to speak to me about other cases of police brutality in the city, and brought out a pile of documents about 10 inches high.
What year was this, Steve?
This was in about 1986, I believe it was. But those are experiences that lead me to distrust the police, to distrust official reports, and to look into things for myself.
And I'm glad you do. I'm glad to see this article, though I understand it's a somewhat abbreviated version of a longer article that you wrote. I'm always a big man for length, since I feel you get more details in there, but some feel that, you know, the punch of the article is best conveyed in brief terms. Interesting you say that this happened to you, your first experiences in high school, because I notice that the only other local publication other than Letters from Me in the Metro, and I guess a critical editorial in City on a Hill Press on the John Dine shooting, and the subsequent cover-up of the issue. And again, I want to clarify by this, I don't mean cover-up in terms of some sort of conscious conspiracy to put together a phony story. Rather, the police department and the district attorney's office chose to believe a story that was in conflict with all the other non-police witnesses, the story of Catalyst bouncer Ben Newman, who made the original complaint against Happy John Dine and was the witness in the back of the squad car, and Officer Martin Over, who both agreed that Ivy John Dine had his gun out and his toy gun out and his toy gun pointed at them and his combat stance assumed and menacing behavior and refusal to respond to don't move commands. These were all disputed by, I would count actually more than a dozen witnesses if you count those that we have secondhand accounts from. But if you talk only of the direct witnesses, there's actually about 9 or 10 of them, and they all state they don't corroborate the story that there was a weapon out and there was something in his hand pointed at the police, and that the don't move was even said prior to the shooting of Happy John Dine. So I kind of interrupted myself. The only other publication that covered this is one that I actually just heard about recently. It's a publication called Gangplank. Gangplank is the publication of Harbor High School. And there's a story in the February issue of Gangplank on page 4. Actually, it's not page 4. It's a little bit deeper into this. It's called No More Happy Times by Elise Vidania. And it's a story about Happy John Dine. And it actually covers, it kind of has some claims by the police, and then it has some claims by those of us who have been critical of police accounts, the other eyewitnesses, in other words. However, what's interesting is I learned that this story was rewritten, that originally it was much more of an attack on the cover-up, but that the school editor, presumably a faculty member, would not allow that particular story to come out, interestingly enough. But still, it seems that when people are in high school, and I've been concerned about a lot of apathy both in high school and on college, there's still plenty of folks who haven't gone to sleep and who really are active. And I hope this becomes true around the situation in Iraq. I want to throw this in because that's a mounting crisis, and we need people to stand up and speak loudly about this incredible showdown game and potential bomb the palaces and bomb anybody else who happens to be in the vicinity game plan of the president and the Pentagon. They've been shouted down recently, you know, at different places on this issue. They need to be shouted down everywhere because vicious and abusive and a lunatic an individual as Saddam Hussein is, genocidal a killer as he is, it doesn't do any good to run around bombing his country. And it looks to me, in a way, like a diversion from Clinton's other problems. That's, of course, kind of the wag the dog story, to quote the current movie, in reality. I'm sorry I had to throw that one in. getting back, however, to Happy John Dine, Although perhaps, you know, we're not straying too far from that, because your paper covers a number of issues. It doesn't just cover police brutality, though I noticed the story above, the Santa Cruz officials cover up police killing of homeless man, is about a judge dropping charges against a black teenager shot by the cops in Minneapolis. Covers a lot of other issues. Chiapas, and here I see on the back, Hands Off Iraq. Do you want to tell people where they can get a copy of this paper and how they can get something about the organization you work with?
Well, the organization is Socialist Action, and it's based out of San Francisco and has chapters in other cities around the country. I've been working with them. I'm not a member of the organization. You can get copies of the newspaper. Lately, I've been distributing it around town here.
You want to give them a phone number, or should they call me here?
And you can contact me at 687-0942, and I can get you copies, subscriptions, or copies with this, especially with this most recent article. The organization itself is an organization that I have some differences with, but I think it's a very good organization, and I'm willing to promote them and help and do work with them, write articles and so forth, and get their newspaper around. They're people who believe that society can be run in a much fairer way, where working class people are not just exploited or unemployed or even left out in the cold, as many homeless people are, and that a sane society can be built where you don't have capitalists, you don't have the rich running everything, you don't have them running the newspapers and lying to us and the police and breaking strikes and giving tickets to homeless people. It'll take us getting together and doing that and looking into these issues and being part of it and organizing demonstrations and educating beyond ourselves about what's going on.
Like the demonstrations that Happy John Dine joined against police brutality last fall, for instance, perhaps.
Right, exactly.
Is any such society, are you talking about a society that hasn't yet been established, right? You're not talking about any existing government, or are you?
No, I'm not talking about anything we have.
You're not talking about Cuba or China?
No. Especially not China. Cuba has some things going for it, some very good things. But that's not, as being a socialist myself, that's not what I see as socialism. Mm-hmm. Socialism is something where the working class runs society and runs it themselves and are able to, and the only way you can have the working class run society is to have free and open discussion and the free organization of various political tendencies, anarchists, socialists, Trotskyists, whatever they may be, or ideologies or ideas beyond that. You have to limit that, especially in a country like Cuba, because suddenly you get a situation like they had in Nicaragua, where you have a political party getting millions of dollars funneled in, which helped defeat the Sandinistas. I think you have to limit the funds and organization of the exploiters and those who've carried out all kinds of actions against the people in the past.
Steve, how long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
I've been here for a year and a half.
And are you anywhere near homelessness yourself, or have you ever been?
Well, I've been in situations where I've been out of work and I've had to crash at different people's houses a lot and
stuff
like that.
Do you have any friends who are homeless in Santa Cruz? Or
oh, yes.
You know people in those circumstances?
Yes.
Do you have friends who have tickets for sleeping outside or sitting down on the sidewalk, things of that sort?
I've found that, actually, well, I've talked to people. I mean, nobody, I don't know if I'd really call them necessarily friends, but acquaintances, people I've talked to, have talked to me about getting tickets, or especially even more the fear of getting tickets, or, you know, and having to deal with that, and finding places to sleep. I, I think it's obscene to have people who have no place to sleep because of the situation, economic situation they're in, and then to be knocked down even further when they're in that situation, to be given tickets and be open to all kinds of police harassment, as it is in Santa Cruz. I mean, the first time I came to Santa Cruz, I was out here visiting, and it was in the early 90s, I forgot exactly what year, but I remember the police attacked a demonstration that was going on. Actually, they were shutting something down called a peace vigil or something like that.
Wanton Dave Jacobs Peace Vigil, probably, you're talking about 1994?
Okay, yeah, that sounds around. There were some police, according to this newspaper article in the Sentinel I read at the time, there were some confrontations between the police and the people there, and the newspaper article, it brought tears to my eyes to see this article, what it said. It said, we have so many programs for homeless people here in Santa Cruz. We are so good to the homeless people here. What more do they want?
Right, right. Yeah, that's the line of our city council, which frequently likes to pride itself on all the wonderful social services. And then, as Mike Rodkin does, and if those of you who are interested in seeing the debate that's going to be coming up on Monday between me and him, I'm sure you'll hear him say again, as a council member and a community studies professor, that, hey, Santa Cruz has the best social services in California, not in the country, and if we let people sleep at night without rousting them, awaking them, or having a law that permits police to do that, we would be inundated with masses and masses of homeless people. I'm going to ask you to stay with us, Steve, if you've got time, but I know that we've gone through the segment on Happy John Dine. Usually we have a lot of call-ins around this time, but unfortunately our phones are not hooked up. But I'm going to be talking about other things, and if you want to provide your thoughts and your reactions, since you don't look like any dummy to me, that'll be good. You're invited to stay with us.
Okay. A couple
of announcements. And this is sort of a strange kind of an announcement, perhaps, if you want to get a break from Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, which you're listening to on 96.3 FM here in beautiful Santa Cruz, or should we say wet, wet, wet Santa Cruz, you can turn to KUSP and hear an interview with Marco of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. He's on a show hosted by John Laird, who I otherwise don't have too much positive to say about usually, or didn't when he was mayor of Santa Cruz. Don't have too much to say about him at all at the moment. But he's talking about the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, which we've covered quite methodically and regularly here on our show. And as you may know, or maybe don't know, Marco and Donna Dice and the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz got a grant. I think it's $1,200. I believe that's the amount. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it's around there, by the Santa Cruz City Council in a motion by Councilmember Scott Kennedy, which I find amazing. I was very impressed. I called up Kennedy and told him good work. Good work there, Squawk Box Scott, as I've often called him. Actually, I didn't use that name when I said that. I'm glad to see that he's taken a positive action on this particular project. Tenants' rights are an essential, and of course, obviously, an essential in dealing with homelessness. You otherwise have an endless, endless open faucet of pouring out homeless people onto the streets. So that was good. And if you want to hear more about this from Marco, you can tune to KUSP FM. I think that is on the extreme left end of the FM dial, but it might be, I'm not quite sure exactly where KUSP is, but I'm sure those of you out there who listen to FM radio probably know, or I hope you do. That's happening between 6:30 and 7 o'clock tonight. Marco has also organized a kind of an association, convention, gathering of tenants' rights unions throughout the Bay Area. And that's going to be happening this Saturday in 2 days at 11 a.m. up in San Francisco, for those of you who happen to be in that area. And it's going to be at 474 Valencia in the community room, 11 a.m. Saturday. There'll be a meeting of many tenants' unions to plot a strategy to provide real protections for tenants. And I think it's really a positive thing, and I encourage you to keep informed on that. If you want to get information directly from Marco and Donna, give a call to 426-0644. That's 426-0644. That's the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, TRUSC. If you have any comments on anything you hear on this show, and we're really sorry you can't call in and talk to us, you can give a call to HUF. HUF is an abbreviation for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, an organization of people concerned with civil rights for the poor and homeless. Many of the participants are homeless. And that phone number is easy to remember, 423-HUF, 423-4833. So if you have any thoughts on any of this, any questions, if you've missed any of the phone numbers and you want to get information as to where to go, don't be shy, don't be afraid to call. This is a community radio station here, and we're not doing this for money, we're not doing this to impress you. We're doing this because we think you need to know the kinds of information we're giving you, and we want to get information we need to know from you, what's going on out there. So give a call to me at 423-HUF, and leave a message on the line. I'll get back to you. If you have an announcement you want to make that you think is relevant to civil rights for the poor, or tenants' rights, or police abuse, leave a message there of any length, and I'll play it on my next show, which is Sunday, 11 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. Yes. So that's what's going on. Boy, we had some nice phone interviews lined up. We thought we were going to have the phones on, but to no avail. We're going to have Flower, who's a one-time homeless woman who's found lodging and is now hooked up legally with Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins. The two of them are quite a pair. Is promised to call us and give us a rundown of recent problems that they've seen homeless people suffering at various authorities' hands. And we can't really give you that now, but I'm hoping that we'll have Flower in the studio either Sunday or possibly next Thursday when the show airs from 6 to 8. We also had planned an interview with Lighthouse Linda Lemaster, as I call her, a community activist and worker with Housing Now in Santa Cruz, as well as various other groups. She was, until very recently, the head of the Women for the Prevention of Violence to Women. I'm sure that's wrong, but it's something like that. It's a commission that meets regularly, a city-sponsored commission concerned with stopping violence against women. She's a very articulate and eloquent person, and those of you who listen regularly have heard her reports regularly. Give you a little musical break now, and then we'll continue with Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We're going to be looking over some local events that have happened in the last couple of weeks while Free Radio has been off the air, and looking forward to what's going to be happening down the pike. So stay with us.
When I was a little girl, I wished I was a boy. I tagged along behind the gang and wore my corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an engineer. Mama told me, can't you be a lady? Your duty is to make me the mother of a pearl. Wait until you're older, dear, and maybe you'll be glad that you're a girl. Dainty as a Dresden statue, gentle as a Jersey cow, smooth as silk, gives creamy milk. Learn to coo, learn to moo, that's what you do to be a lady now. When I went to school, I learned to write and how to read, some history, geography, and home economy. And typing is a skill that every girl should need, to while away the extra time until the time to breed. And then they had the nerve to say, what would you like to be? I says, I'm gonna be an engineer. No, you only need to learn to be a lady. The duty isn't yours for to try and run the world. An engineer could never have a baby. Remember, dear, that you're a girl. So I become a typist and a study on the sly, working out the day and night so I could qualify. And every time the boss come in, he pinched me on the thigh, says, I've never had an engineer. You owe it to the job to be a lady. It's the duty of the staff for to give the boss a whirl. The wages that you get are crummy maybe, but it's all you get cause you're a girl. She's smart for a woman. I wonder how she got that way. You get no choice, you get no voice. Just stay mum, pretend you're dumb. That's how you come to be a lady today. Then Jimmy come along and we set up a conjugation. We were busy every night with love and recreation. I spent the day at work so he could get his education. And now he's an engineer. He says, I know you'll always be a lady. It's the duty of my darling to love me all her life. I couldn't engineer, look after or obey me. Remember, dear, that you're my wife. Well, as soon as Jimmy got a job, I began again. Then happy at me turret lay the year or so. And then the morning that the twins were born, Jimmy says to them, kids, your mother was an engineer. You owe it to the kids to be a lady. Dainty as a dish rag, faithful as a chow. Stay at home, you got to mind the baby. Remember, you're a mother now. Well, every time I turn around, there's something else to do. It's cook a meal or mend a sock or sweep a floor or two. I listen in to Jimmy Young, it makes me want to spew. I was gonna be an engineer. Now I really wish that I could be a lady. I could do the lovely things that a lady's supposed to do. I wouldn't even mind if only they would pay me. And I could be a person too. What price for a woman? You can buy her for a ring of gold. To love and obey without any pay, you get a cook and a nurse, for better or worse. No, you don't need a purse when a lady is sold. But now that times are harder and my Jimmy's got the sack, I went down to Vickers, they were glad to have me back. But I'm a third-class citizen, my wages tell me that, and I'm a first-class engineer. The boss, he says, we pay you as a lady. You only got the job 'cause I can't afford a man. With you, I keep the profits high as maybe. You're just a cheaper pair of hands. You got one fault, and you're a woman. You're not worth equal pay. A bitch or a tart, you're nothing but hard. Shallow and vain, you got no brain. You even go down a drain like a lady today. I listened to me mother and I joined a typing pool. I listened to me lover and I put him through his school. But if I listen to the boss, I'm just a bloody fool and an underpaid engineer. I've been a sucker ever since I was a baby, as a daughter, as a wife, as a mother and a dear. But I'll fight them as a woman, not a lady. Fight them as an engineer.
And that was Peggy Seeger, again from At the Present Moment, one of her best and most well-known songs, actually the long version. That's sometimes you hear that song cut up and pieces of it, but that's the whole song, I Was Gonna Be an Engineer. Really a great song. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you want to call in and leave a message for the station, if you want information about the station, if you want to contribute anything to the station, you can call 427-4523, the voicemail, or you can show up on Sunday, February 22nd at 8 o'clock at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium in downtown Santa Cruz at 846 Front Street. There's going to be another benefit, or a benefit, if you will, featuring Junk Sick Don, Political Silence, and Dilligaff, among other groups. So bring $5. The show is for people of all ages. Bring your kids, bring your grandma, bring yourself. And come on down. That's, again, Sunday, February 22nd, 8 o'clock p.m., Veterans Memorial Building, 846 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Have $5 in your hand. We can use the money. You'll feel better if you do it, and the kind of payback you'll get for this is better than any movie you'll see down at the Cinema 9, I'll tell you. You get hours and hours and hours and hours of broadcasting you'd never hear anywhere else. And I think that's for sure. Or as we might say here at Free Radio, that's for fucking sure. I'm still here with Steve Argue. And Steve here introduced originally as a writer on the Happy John Dine case for the newspaper Socialist Action and a fighter against police abuse. He also is concerned with other issues, and he's going to talk about that right now, a little kind of broadside on the issue that's confronting us all, the U.S. war against Iraq. Looks like a flyer you got there, Steve. What's this about?
This is there's a protest happening in San Francisco coming up this Saturday, February 21st, at 1 p.m. at the U.S. Federal Building, and that's at 450 Golden Gate in San Francisco. It's what this demonstration is demanding is no U.S. war against Iraq, and also an end to sanctions now. And it's endorsed by a large number of organizations and individuals, including.
When is this again, this demonstration?
It's Saturday, February 21st. So this coming Saturday, at 1 p.m. And I'm going to be I'm organizing a carpool. So if people are interested, you can give me a call at 687-0942. And I think this is very important. The U.S. government, the major newspapers are playing this whole thing up that Saddam Hussein is creating weapons of mass destruction, and that this is the reason the U.S. has to stop him. And they've even been talking in terms of using nuclear weapons to stop these weapons of mass destruction. I mean, it's an absurd, hypocritical thing they're talking about, we really have to look at how hypocritical it is for the country, the only country in the world that's ever used nuclear weapons, the worst weapon of mass destruction there is, and wiped out all those innocent, all those human beings in Japan. This country hypocritically talking about Iraq and what weapons they have.
Well, it's ironic because the U.S. is the one who encouraged this kind of development program in Iraq and may have even funded the program in order to get them to beat the Iranians in 1988 in the Iraq-Iran conflict.
Right.
So, Saddam was, as I think, was it Bush or was it Reagan who said, he's our bastard, in a phraseology that kind of brings us back to Nicaragua and Somoza being our bastard. He's a bastard, but he's our bastard. For those who are interested in, more local demonstrations, I think there actually may be something happening in Santa Cruz. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I know in San Jose, you can get information on that subject by calling Lennox Sweeney. And he is at 408-257-9424. Again, Lennox Sweeney. If you're interested in your going to a demonstration more locally, can't make it up to San Francisco, 257-9424, or email Lummox, L-U-M-M-O-X, at best.com. That's his name is Lennox, but he's got an email address of Lummox, L-U-M-M-O-X, at best.com. Phone number 257-9424. Or if you're interested in going up to San Francisco with Steve here, give us your phone number again, Steve.
687-0942. And also, you can page me if I'm not around at 1-800 967. No, is that... I forgot my pager number.
But if you want to page him, do leave a message at 423 Huff in the event you can't catch him at home, and he will give me his pager number later when he remembers it. We will hit him. We'll slap him upside the head a couple times until he gets his memory back. It's all that funny green stuff, probably. Wow. So that's happening this weekend. Tenants union stuff in San Francisco. You can kind of go to the tenants union meeting and then wander down to the Iraqi demonstration and express your concern there. Go back to the tenants union, find out what's happening. The next day you can go on Sunday back in Santa Cruz to the benefit, 8 o'clock at the Veterans Hall. And then I'm going to suggest on Monday you might want to go to up to Kresge College, where there's going to be a debate between none other than yours truly and Councilmember Michael Rotkin, two-time mayor and two-timer big time, actually. In my view, on the sleeping ban issue, he is the swing vote on the city council and could change that law within a month, but has chosen instead to surround himself in a blanket of rhetoric, but continue to make it illegal for homeless people to have real blankets after 11 o'clock at night. And for those of you who listen to this show, this is an old, old, old story. The sleeping ban makes it illegal for homeless to sleep after 11 o'clock at night outside of a house or hotel. That essentially criminalizes 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz. It makes it illegal even to cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock, even if you're not asleep. And it's hard to believe, but people have been arrested for this, and tickets continue to be given out, and more important, people continue to be harassed, told to move on, and they sleep in fear. And there's, again, a general crackdown around public spaces for the homeless. So, for instance, the entire riverbed is now illegal after dark for anybody to be in, using the pretext, that, as the chief of police did, that there's gang-related activity there, though he didn't give us any stats about there being an upsurge of crime, that there are wild parties, as Jim Lang said, and that they have no other way to deal with poor drunken parties and to make it illegal for everybody to take a walk along the levee after dark. It's preposterous, but unfortunately, it's what our city council, the Rotkin Matthews Hernandez Council, has chosen to believe and to follow. And the real progressives, who aren't at the top of my list of heroes, Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, because I think they have taken a dive many a time, but nonetheless, they are substantially better than the rest of the council, and they reflect, I think, a majority opinion in the progressive community. And the votes that elected them and their compatriots on the council have essentially been betrayed in the case of the other council members, Rotkin, Kennedy, Hernandez, Matthews, these people who claim to be progressives and who got scan endorsements, sold scan right down the river. And that's becoming increasingly clear in such debates as the Pelton Street property giveaway.
Promises, because I think, frankly, I think most of the audience isn't going to have any problem and doesn't need a lot of persuading around the sleeping ban. It's clearly abusive to arrest people for sleeping. It's clearly a human rights violation. It's clearly something that we don't want in Santa Cruz. The real problem is we have a city council that couldn't care less about this issue and has ignored and arrested homeless activists who have brought this issue to the council's attention. Patiently, diplomatically, eloquently, persistently for the last decade. I wrote a letter to the Cabrillo Voice, which I'm not sure if it's been published or not, but I have a copy of it here. I'm going to read it to you. It's about the sleeping ban. I'm sorry, it's to Fish Wrap Live, which is another University of UCSC publication. It responds to an article by Emily Snyder. And the Emily Snyder story was a pretty good story in an early issue of the Fish Wrap earlier this year called Homeless by Day, Homeless by Night, City Debates While People Freeze, January 21st issue. I write this. Emily Snyder, the writer, painted a vivid picture of the city's anti-homeless go-to-sleep, go-to-jail ordinance, which makes sleeping itself a crime. Even if you're awake, covering up with blankets is also considered criminal conduct anywhere in city limits, which includes half of the UCSC campus. If there were actually shelter, a campground, or, dare we dream, low-income housing available for the 500 to 1,500 homeless people of Santa Cruz, city, this law might have a practical rationale. As it is, with spaces for less than 50 homeless people most of the year and less than 200 during the winter, it's a cruel joke, as Snyder's article shows us. The ban has been a traditional tool for police officers not only to harry and harass poor people sleeping outside or in their cars, but also a means of attacking vigils and political protests. For instance, the attack on demonstrators protesting the U.S. action in Iraq at the town clock back in 1991. And we may see a repeat of that very soon. So much for peace vigils. The ban is often supplemented with additional, quote, regulations by a homeless, hostile Parks and Recreation Department head who sends his rangers out to ride the Pogonip, beating the bushes for illegal campers, Jim Lang. In 1991, Jim Lang, dynastic department head since anyone can remember, successfully pressed to make it illegal to be at the town clock from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m., declaring the cement area a, quote, park for enforcement purposes. 6 years before, he had initiated a shutdown of all city parks after dark to protect neighbors nearby, quote unquote. In the late 80s and early 90s, Lang conspired with merchants to remove benches from downtown Santa Cruz's Pacific Avenue to discourage unsavory elements. Lang was the key person who made walking, standing, sitting, or lying anywhere along the San Lorenzo River in Santa Cruz a crime after dark starting December 1997. Homeless people downtown report that police regularly drive them away from the protective awnings of local businesses, even at night when stores are closed, the weather is wet, and they are not blocking the way. Recently, under the leadership of officers notorious for harassing the homeless, Sergeant Sticky Fingers Butchie Baker and Officer Jack-em-up Jim Howes, police have been systematically confiscating shopping carts and carrying carts from the homeless and dumping their possessions on the wet ground between torrential rains. Reports of harassment at the organically correct downtown New Leaf Market make the picture even grimmer. Nor are the homeless guaranteed a warm, restful night in jail if arrested under the sleeping ban. Frequently, the hapless sleeper is seized, arrested, handcuffed, jailed in a cold held holding cell for 4 hours, allowed only one layer of clothing, processed without a meal or medical attention, and released back on the streets in the cold and dark with or without her blankets. Perennial sleeping ban champion Mike Rotkin says, quote, there is no other city where people can sleep outside. However, he lies, because he knows that Eugene, Oregon has already decriminalized sleeping in vehicles in industrial areas. And Miami, Florida did so years ago under federal court order. Most important, Rotkin and his city council majority haven't offered the homeless any alternatives to his discredited hide-out or get-out policy. It becomes more clear that only voter initiatives and voter recalls can circumvent the Rotkin majority on city council. The Rotkin majority's recent contempt for democratic process and the homeless garden sellout, its move to deal away the homes of hundreds of people in the beach flats to the Seaside Company, its rubber stamping of the police cover-up of the suspicious shooting of disabled homeless activist Happy John Dine have all dismayed local homeless rights workers. UCSC has its own little brother sleeping ban law, which students should demand be repealed. More about this in a future letter. Meantime, Rotkin and I will go toe-to-toe debating the sleeping ban at Kresge Town Hall Monday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. Be there to sign and circulate the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, and you can call them at 457-9754, extension 182. Again, the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, 457-9754, extension 182. And that's a letter, actually, I sent to Fish Rap Live that was not published. It's too bad. They actually told me they were going to publish it, but for some reason it never saw print. I'm not suggesting a conspiracy, but hey, I hope they print the next one, because I think, particularly at this time, it's really an important issue. We need about 5,000 signatures to be sure of getting on the ballot, be sure of getting the sleeping ban repeal on the ballot, and that requires lots of city voters signing this up, and also it requires lots of you out there who don't like that sleeping ban and who live in the city and are registered voters, for those of you who are, to go out and circulate that petition. Unless we get 50 signatures a day, we are not going to make it, folks. And right now, we may be falling behind. So if you want to help out, you can again call 457-9754, extension 182. 457-9754, extension 182, to help repeal the sleeping ban and eliminate a very bad law and really strike a blow for basic human rights here. The right to sleep is a basic human right. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this is your Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show for February 19th, 1998. I'm glad to be with you, and I'm glad to have in the studio with me Steve Argue, a writer, activist, and a coffee drinker. Boy, I wish I had some of that coffee myself. I probably will in a moment. Often what I do is I cull through articles to bring stuff to your attention that you might not otherwise hear about or read about. And I'm also eager to bring to your attention stuff that you actually might have heard before, but you can profit by hearing again. I'm thinking of the debate at City Council last week ago, Tuesday now, I guess it is, on the Pelton Street sellout, as I call it, or the Homeless Garden Project sellout. And I'm going to play next a tape of selections from that debate. The tape was made by homeless activist Becky Johnson, and it's pretty darn long, so we're going to have to cut it somewhat. But it's really, I think, an important thing. I hope that people can begin by understanding that there was never a chance in hell that all of these eloquent speakers would be listened to by the city council. And I really... I wish that the speakers who came up and who you're going to hear had essentially told the city council, we got, inside of 2 months or 3 months, enough signatures to put this matter on the ballot, the question of whether the property that the Homeless Garden Project is on should be sold or should be kept for the Homeless Garden Project and for the city. And in order to circumvent this, the council quickly did a deal, sold the property to circumvent the initiative. If they can get an initiative like that on the ballot, then they can get a recall on the ballot for each of the council members that did this dirty deed. And that's really what they needed to be talking about, and that's what they need to be doing. I know maybe it sounds a little arrogant of me to tell them what to do. I'll be arrogant. I think you're not going to get any change from this council until you take that kind of action. When they see themselves being recalled and they realize that the same signatures that are trying to keep the Pelton Street property are going to go to send their asses back home and put some decent people in there on decent issues who aren't hypocrites and are truly progressive, then I think their votes will quickly change. I don't think that should change us from to persuade us not to throw them out, but at least we won't have to wait for another 4 years to get these idiots out of here. I mean, we will get a change of council somewhat in November, perhaps, but unfortunately people like Mike Rotkin don't come up for a vote until 2000, and what we need around him is a recall. So I'm going to play you now a little bit of the debate at City Council at the last meeting, and there's going to be another council meeting next Tuesday, and again, the issue has been buried. I mean, it's been passed on, just like the cover-up of the shooting of Happy John Dine, just like the sleeping ban issue. None of these things are being considered by the council now, or really got any consideration in the real scheme of things. But let's hear some of the discussion that went on at that time.
To Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, 96.3 FM, Santa Cruz. And now we'll hear some selected cuts from the February 10th City Council meeting in which the fate of the Pelton Street property, former home of the heart of the Homeless Garden Project, had been located, and whether, despite an initiative circulated by citizens of Santa Cruz to designate that site as urban agriculture, whether that would indeed become 15 luxury homes.
I think everyone got that. I'd like to call the meeting back to order. We now will be taking up the last item in the agenda, which is item 26. Which
Mayor
is
Celia
a development
Scott
agreement
speaking.
Between Pacific Union Homes and the City of Santa Cruz to construct 15 single-family homes on the Pelton property at 320 Pelton Avenue. We have a resolution approving the addendum to the negative declaration and introduction of the ordinance regarding the development agreement for publication. Do we have a staff report to the council?
We can have several. The council asked me if I'd give a brief chronology of events, and I'll start off, and planning staff can talk about both the Planning Commission meeting and the history, a more detailed history than I'll give, but since you asked me to do this, I will. Going back to June of 1992, the City Council approved the tentative map and the negative declaration for a 16-lot subdivision on the Pelton property. The final map on the site was recorded in October of 1993. On February 11th, 1997, the council discussed and obtained public comment on the process for the sale of the Pelton property, continued that discussion to the February 25th, 1997 meeting, at which point you directed that we enter into a contract with Bolton Hill Company, Norman Schwartz, for a process to sell the Pelton property. The decision at that point in February of 97 was to proceed with a sale in the fall of 97. Selection of Bolton Hill Company was my recommendation. The city used Norm Schwartz for the Sky Park real estate deal, which I worked on for 10 years. I think Mr. Schwartz worked on for 6 years, so we had a lengthy experience with Mr. Schwartz over a period of many years with a very difficult and very complicated real estate transaction. On November 25th of 1997, the council opened its closed litigation session for the purpose of allowing public comment on the sale of the property, and then the city attorney reported on that date, November 25th, 97, that the council had voted to sell the property to the highest bidder, which was Pacific Union Homes. Attempt to sell the property with single-family lots. The argument was that first the city would save the cost of the improvements and also have the transaction at one time early on, as opposed to delayed over a protracted period of time. The issue has more to do with whether people support the original sale of the property than with the development agreement. The escrow for the sale closed a week ago today. The city has deposited the proceeds of the sale in a Pelton property fund, and we can report back that to you in the future. I know that Ken has more details.
Tony was in opposition to the proposed development agreement. I think you all have copies of the minutes. Several issues were raised from the public. The issues that the Planning Commission focused on was, first of all, one issue had been raised regarding the California Government Code. A second concern raised by a couple of members of the Commission was the issue about the park. They wanted to see a definite timeline, basically more certainty regarding the construction of the park. That the Commission raised was that the property had been sold, and given that, they saw no particular reason to take this action on the development agreement. There was a final vote of 4-1 against a motion made by Mary Tustin to find in support of the development agreement. So the Commission denied that motion.
So in other words, and I apologize for all this legal gobbledygook, and the tape is somewhat crudely cut, but our production staff has limited resources. The actual Planning Commission voted 4-1 against this agreement with the developer, which apparently will give the developers, $2.7 million, and it'll give the city $2.6 million. I think they get a little bit more than the city, lots of bucks for this property. And even the city's own body voted 4-1 against it. But as you'll see, the city council ended up, it began and ended up voting 5-2 in favor of this agreement in spite of overwhelming opposition to it. Let's continue to hear this.
Scott?
Yeah, it's not a question, but I'd like to make a statement before we begin the evening's discussion. I wanted to disclose publicly, before we start the public hearing, that Mr. Schwartz from Bolton Hill was a contributor to my reelection campaign. The fact that he was a contributor in the amount is a matter of public record, on record with the city clerk, and I've complied fully with all campaign finance laws, both in terms of accepting the contribution and reporting it publicly. I felt it's important to say that because the insinuation has been made, though not to my face, of course, that this somehow influenced my vote or my position on this. I want to say I couldn't do the math precisely on such short notice, but I think the size of Mr. Schwartz's contribution is 1/266th of the amount of money that I raised for the homeless garden project last.
And this is Scott Kennedy speaking, the council member who has refused regularly to go on the air to discuss his role in anti-homeless actions and closing the homeless campground back in 1995, and abusively treating protesters at the demonstration in 1996 in front of City Hall, And in continuing, he refused most recently to sign the Sleeping Ban Initiative in 1998. So Scott Kennedy is here defending himself, claiming he, even though he got a contribution from a person involved in this, that it's not relevant. I don't know if it is relevant or not, but I know that his background is relevant, and I know that his vote on this issue is very relevant. He was one of the five majority that voted to scuttle the Homeless Garden Project.
Years. It's remarkable to me that people would think that a person or a vote could be so cheaply bought, but it kind of sets the stage for the rest of the discussion tonight.
And several members of the public had comments, too.
I also took a look at the cost of the land. It breaks down when I do the cost of the lot, the cost of the development of the land, the housing cost at $100 per square foot in a 2,800 square foot house. The cost to build it will be $450,000 a house. The price to sell it will be probably $600,000 a house. The money that the developer will make is what he has to sell the whole thing for is around $9 million. Let me see if I can find my figures here. $6,750,000 will be his total cost. If he sells them for approximately $100,000 profit, he'll make the whole thing will go for $9 million. If this is a real development plan, then I think the city council, which will take the risk of loss, should also take the benefits of the gain. Ask them to share the profits with you as well as the losses with you. And anyway, that's what this ordinance is to guarantee him an exit in case there is problems with the land in the future. But I don't think he's willing to guarantee the profits with you if there is any in the future. And the other thing I'd like to say is that I think that one of the problems that I see here is that there's a real crunch in time. The homeless garden needs more, from what I can see, the homeless garden needs more time. You're taking away a garden for this year that can't be replaced. If the city council, if Richard Wilson and the other people in the city council had made possible a garden earlier in the planning process, so that by now there was another garden in place of this one, then I think that the argument would be somewhat muted as what the homeless people would do. And I think that this is one of the ideas that I was thinking, that you're taking away soil that's too valuable and will take many years to replace, and you're taking it away a little too quickly. And I'd like you to consider that.
Thank you.
Listening now to oral communication speakers.
I'd like a bit of information here. Was the amended soil scraped and moved to the new site?
No.
Oh, I would absolutely.
A move to what new site?
The end of Delaware site.
That's not a new site. That's an existing site that the Homeless Garden Project has been at. No soil has been removed from the Pelton property. The site on Delaware. Schaefer Road, Schaefer in Delaware, is not a new site. The garden has had a small property there. It's not their property. They've leased it for several years. There's nothing new.
It was my understanding that there was additional property to be
left. Not yet. No.
Oh.
There's nothing new. No, the person who pointed out that the staff report was incorrect actually was correct. There has not been a new site located. It's a site that was already there that being used by the Homeless Garden Project, not owned by them, but leased by them.
Okay.
From the property owner.
Someone who's started tinkering with the garden, it's absolutely critical when you get your soil to such prime condition that it's an extremely valuable resource, and it shouldn't be under homes. It should be preserved for a garden. And I frankly am looking forward to having the Schaefer Road site expanding for the garden project. I think it's an extremely appropriate site. It's near roads to major markets. As the enterprise expands and becomes even more viable, I would love to see trucks full of designer vegetables on their way up to San Francisco residents.
Dr. Cruz, tradition in respecting the initiative process, Yes, large moneyed interests have subverted that process several times in our California history, but I think the initiative process is a valid, verifiable, and precious, and may I say, very American way of bringing attention to issues and affecting change within our communities. I want to call your attention to page 9 of the development agreement, section 4.6. Page 9 of the development agreement, section 4.6. It troubles me that it, 6 lines down, it talks, this is page 4 of 4.6 of the development agreement, page 9, 4.6. Alter the sequencing of the development phases, whether adopted or imposed by the city council or through the initiative or referendum process, shall apply to the property or any part thereof. Again, I think that the initiative process is under attack here. It seems to me it's being undermined or eroded. I want to go back to the city attorney's remarks last February 5th before the Planning Commission, and that's on page 7 of the minutes of that meeting. And it's 14 lines from the bottom of the page. And I'm sorry for all pointing this out. I just hope you'll bear with me. It starts off with R. Corotaro, but the second line on page 7 of those minutes says, J. Barisoni said that the city council directed the city manager to execute the sales agreement in November or December with a 30 or 45-day escrow. The initiative petitions were being circulated at that time, and the city council was aware of the rate at which signatures were being gathered.
R. Quartararo
ascertained that the city never represented to the buyer that the development agreement would be approved as part of the final sale. And I emphasize here, the developer asked for the agreement after the transaction was in escrow to protect itself from the initiative. You all know how time-consuming, physically taxing, and just plain tough it is to get 10 to 15% of the registered voters in Santa Cruz to sign a petition. We got 5,000 signatures. And because we were working with 25 to 30% invalid signature rate. And that's because we needed 3,800, we went out and we got 5,000. I was under the impression that we wanted more participation among our electorate. More than 50 people came out to gather signatures in this effort. 35 people came out before that 1:30 session, if you remember, back in November. And that was when, you know, people took time off their jobs, lunch hours, et cetera, to come here and put forth our arguments.
Chris, could you sum up now?
Yes, I will. And 22 people came to the Planning Commission meeting the other night, braving the rainstorms. And more than 5,000 Santa Cruzans have signed this petition. I would ask, just again, that you not support this development agreement. Again, as many of the speakers have already said, I think it puts the city at risk, and I think it's not a good path to follow, and my particular concern is the initiative agreement. I passed out 6 questions that I wish you would consider, and if somebody could either get back to me on it, or if in your discussion after the after the public has had its say, if you could address those issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are 3 more speakers now, or 4? 4. All right.
6.
5, 6.
I'll make it brief. I'm feeling sick. I just want to remind the City Council that you have publicly opposed the annexation of Watsonville agricultural land, and the development agreement that you have in your hands tonight paves over urban agriculture land in the city of Santa Cruz. And development agreement that you have in your hands seems to be an inconsistent policy. On one hand, you're saying let's not annex any agricultural land in the city of Watsonville, but we are going to develop over some urban agricultural site that we have in the city of Santa Cruz. So I want to ask a couple of questions. One is, which part of the county are we obliging to be responsible for agricultural land in the county of Santa Cruz? The other question is more of a statement. It has to do with $1 million that has been allocated for the sale to the Green Belt. Well, the Green Belt is a Green Belt. It isn't urban agricultural land. It isn't even agricultural land. It's outside, I believe, the city, or maybe part of the city limits. And Pelton Street is within the city, and we're talking about urban agriculture. So just to conclude, I just want to say that the development agreement takes away one of the only possible urban agricultural sites within the city of Santa Cruz, and that's a very valuable piece of property because of that, and I wanted to bring that point to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council members Robert Norris, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'm not going to ask you to not support this development agreement because I think it's a done deal. I think it was a done deal before people walked in here. I think in spite of a planning commission vote of 4-1, we got a done deal here. And it's really kind of sad to watch this audience coming up and giving you all kinds of positive arguments, detailed concerns, and instead what we see is we're going to see 5 votes saying no, regardless. Why should the community be pleading, however, to do this, is my real concern. There are 5,000 signatures, but there are going to be 5 votes that say those 5,000 signatures aren't worth a damn. You know, paving over urban agriculture, 5 votes are going to say that's just fine. Opposed in Watsonville, but supported in Santa Cruz, doing this paving over, 5 votes say go right ahead. Give the developer an exit, but don't insist that the developer share his profits. 5 votes will say A-okay. Destroy a garden at a crucial time. 5 votes are going to say do it. Remove soil that will take many years to replace. 5 votes are going to do that, too. Oh, maybe you'll move the soil. That's possible. You know, I'm glad this session is being televised because I think the community needs to see what's going on here. It's sad to watch weary people coming up here who've done all kinds of work, giving all kinds of reasonable arguments, are just going to be summarily rejected by this council. The homeless people have seen this for years, of course, around issues like the sleeping ban, but now it's going to happen a little higher up in the food chain. Tonight, this community is going to witness the triumph of power over reason and right. That's what we're going to see here in this council. You've heard the kitchen facilities and greenhouses can't be built, but 5 votes don't care about that. A beautiful community garden versus 15 more luxury homes, what do 5 votes care about that? A deal for the developers, 5 votes say that's fine. The complete destruction of any kind of confidence of the community that your council is going to wait for an initiative that has gotten 5,000 votes. More than that. 5 votes will say, go to hell. We're not listening. We don't care. We'll smile and nod as you speak, but we're going to just vote it down anyway. The real concern, I think, of this community has got to be, what are we going to do about those 5 votes? How much longer is the community going to tolerate people in progressive clothing voting like reactionaries and pro-developers? That's the question that this audience has to ask when they go home tonight after those 5 votes do their voting. The city is obliging itself to an outside interest to stop the voters' will. 5 votes will say that's great. Shouldn't private land be rezoned at the expense of a developer? Well, 5 votes will say that's okay. Waive the fundamental rights of the city of Santa Cruz. You've heard all these arguments. 5 votes are going to pass that as well. Neighbors of the property. 5 votes are going to ignore their will. Protecting the developers in the face of a certain court fight, 5 votes are going to drag this right into the court. That's what we're going to watch tonight. That's what's going to happen. I would love for this council to prove me wrong, but I just don't see that happening. And that's why I think the people in this room and the people in the audience watching have to prove this wrong by changing it. By getting out there and telling the leaders or the misleaders of this whole thing who came to power saying one thing and are now saying another, making sure those people get out of office and out of office fast. Those are the 5 votes. They're going to be rejecting the Planning Commission's own recommendation, undermining the public process.
4 minutes.
Not conforming to the general welfare. Paying half of the legal costs for the battle. 5 votes are going to say, sure, that's okay. You're going to hear some very nice arguments and some schmoozing back and forth, but that's what the end result is going to be. 5 votes are going to tell the Homeless Garden Project to take a hike. The overwhelming testimony of the Planning Commission, you have it in your hands. 5 votes say, who cares?
Good evening.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Jennifer Thermanos. I worked at the Homeless Garden Project for about a year and a half, and I'm here tonight to say 2 simple things. One thing, I appeal to you to support the democratic process tonight concerning the Pelton site. I'm a real firm believer in community. I think that the strength of this country will come out of its communities if we can work closely together, and if we can't rely and have faith in the democratic process on a local level, then I don't really have much hope for state or federal levels. Community is where we can really communicate. So I really appeal to you to please allow the democratic process to happen here with the Pelton site and let the people have a say about what they want to happen in this land. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the homeless garden will stay there. But if the people feel that it's important to have this land be a natural green space, then let's listen to the people that are here now. You know, let's take care of our community members that are here now instead of building more houses to drag more people in. I think that that's really important. And another thing I would like to say is if the homeless garden does move, please see to it that it's given what it needs to survive. I mean, it's a project that's serving the community, and it's an educational facility. I learned much about agriculture there, and education is funded on all levels of the government. It's important for the present and the future, so please see to it that the garden stays strong and doesn't just fade out and die out. It's served this community for 8 years. As people have said before, it's known worldwide. So, thank you.
Thank you.
I wondered if anybody had any reading glasses they could lend.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, that's a lot better. Thank you.
Could you just state your name for the record?
Yes, thanks. Gillian Greenside, Liberty Street, Santa Cruz. The council tonight heard a lot of testimony about fluoridation of water, and you all listened carefully and made decisions to review it, and because it was a serious issue, put off for later time. I hope you will give this issue equal amount of consideration. A lot has been said at the Planning Commission, and I think a lot has been said tonight. I'd just like to make 3 points. Some of which may have been made, but I think there's a mistake when you ask people just to make a show of hands, those who would make the same points that other people have made, because sometimes we each must, in our own way, make a point that we feel very strongly about. And a lot of people feel very strongly about the Pelton property. And I think there's something very remiss of what's been going on here. I'd just like to bring up 3 points. First of all, and I'm sure that the city attorney has advised you after the last planning commission, and I was watching the council meeting this evening, so you got some advisement from him about this issue in your closed session. That we hear in the public, we didn't hear what it was. However, I would still like to reiterate that the California Government Code Section 654402 requires that the Planning Commission must prepare a report that indicates that the disposition of the property conforms with the general plan, which is a requirement for sale of any public land. Yes.
I just wondered, the city attorney did prepare a memorandum that responded to that. Was that made available to her? To Ms. Greenside?
I don't know. It wasn't.
I know it wasn't, but if it's available.
It doesn't apply to charter cities. Section 65700 makes it inapplicable to charter cities. Did the research next.
Which day. Santa Cruz is?
Yes, Santa Cruz is a charter city.
But she should be afforded the chance to get a copy of this memo, because all of us have read it.
I
can't find mine, but.
Well, I don't mind being afforded the chance to get a copy of the memo, but I still did read the California Government Code, and it didn't exempt chartered cities from this. But I at least would like to say that that was what I researched. And the question is that the disposition of the property conform with a general plan. And I think that there are at least 3 areas that I'd like to address where it doesn't. Number one is the provision of parks in the area, and I'm sure you've heard a lot this evening about the provision of parks in our area.
I was party to the public. I was party to the public hearings on this, and I remember the last hearing was between the Parks and Recreation Commission and the City Council, and it said that a certain provision of this park would be made available. Then it was somehow dismissed in the general plan. There's some things happening here that are not quite up to par. I don't think that it conforms with the general plan in terms of low-income housing. I don't think it conforms with the general plan in terms of urban agriculture. And I think that there's no real way to go ahead with this without questioning that the city has not done the right thing. And I think that the only way to do the right thing is to go back to the drawing board and do what is required by government code. I don't think the city is exempt from that. And I certainly think the question of adequate parks and urban agriculture has not been well enough addressed.
For a minute.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Chris Jennings, 832 Riverside Avenue, Friends of Pelton Street. I've been here all night just as you have, and we're all human, so I know you're probably pretty tired right now. So if you want to take a second to take a deep breath or to get up and shake or shift in your chair, I'll understand because there's only one more speaker. And I really want you to listen to what I have to say tonight. I think that the issues in these public hearings can tend to get confused. And I have a problem with what the city manager said at the outset of this part of the meeting when he said this is really more about the sale of the land than the development agreement. The land has been sold. What we're deciding tonight is the development agreement. And I think of all the reasons why the Planning Commission rejected this development agreement 4-1, one of the most important ones was that the city attorney admitted to the fact that this agreement was written by the developers, and he approved it. So as a public body representing the citizens, that alerted to them, we've got to really scrutinize this document. And I challenge Mr. Schwartz, Mr. Barrasoni, and Mr. Wilson, when they're arguing for this development agreement, to cite the agreement itself and particular sections and particular words. The Planning Commission voted 4-1 because of what happened tonight. Citizens got up who had read the development agreement and cited sections, had read through it, had done research. So inconsistent with that, I would like you all to turn to Section M of the Purchase Agreement. Section M of the Purchase Agreement.
Clearly, we don't have that in front of us, so you can...
All right, well, I'll remind you, and then you can go back and look at it later. It simply and clearly states that in the case of a successful initiative or any related regulation, the developers, at their sole discretion, may terminate and rescind the agreement and be reimbursed for any costs associated for the purchase of the property or the development. This is a great deal. At any time, if the initiative passes or if the city decides to regulate, the developers get all their money back. This is a great deal. They don't need any more protection than this. This is the operative language today. The land is sold. But the developers want more. That's why they wrote this agreement. Now I ask you to turn to Section 5.2 of the Development Agreement. It has language to the effect, city shall prevent any ordinance or future ordinance. City shall not support, adopt, or enact any future ordinance which would violate the express positions or intent of this agreement. And the most onerous of all is that the city shall pay half of the developer's legal costs in any legal battle with city residents. In effect, the city would be using our tax dollars to pay for half of the developer's costs in a legal battle with us. It makes no sense. And when you think about it, Pacific Union Homes is not in a bargaining position to have this development agreement go past our elected officials. The land has been sold. This land was on the market for only 2 weeks, and there were several bids. The reason why there are so many bids is people are going to make money on this property. It's a very valuable piece of land, as city council members have noted. The Planning Commission found no compelling reason for the city to approve of this development agreement. The land has been sold. The argument that the city needs the money for important projects is moot. The land has been sold. The money will be forthcoming. And if the developer, for any reason, can't uphold the end of the deal, there are other people that bid on the property. There are other people dying to purchase this property and build on it. So finally, I reiterate my challenge. We have cited section numbers, and if you haven't read this development agreement, please read it before you vote on it. This is about the development agreement. The land has been sold. I challenge the city manager, I challenge the city attorney, and I challenge Mr. Schwartz, when they argue for this development agreement, to cite the language. This development agreement is not necessary. The land has been sold. If this development agreement attempts to undermine the sovereignty of city residents, the sovereignty of the city, and undermines our constitutionally protected right to petition, to pass ordinances, this development agreement was written by the developers for the benefit of the developers and for the detriment of the city. As our representatives, your burden, if you vote for this development agreement, is to articulate how this helps the city of Santa Cruz in light of the fact that the land has been sold. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and I'm your host, Robert Norris. You are also listening to a tape of the city council meeting of, I believe it was February 10th, yeah, in which the Homeless Garden Project got the final shaft in spite of an initiative placed on the ballot by 15% of the city voters trying to stop the city council from giving things away to developers, which, as you can hear, that's what they're concerned about, these speakers, and that's eventually what they did in a 5-2 vote. In the studio with me, I have one of the people who's been closely following this and is now writing a story on it, Becky Johnson, who actually put together most of this tape.
You didn't know the weeds are all around us and they're growing. It will soon be too late for the night if you leave them on the wind.